Welcome to Inside Michigan Business Podcast. This episode is made possible by Dell for Startups, providing solutions for all of your startup needs at special savings. Check out Dell's top business class PCs and accessories and register at startupnation.com/Dell to save on Dell's awesome lineup of best-in-class laptops, monitors, and accessories. All right, welcome to Inside Michigan Business. I'm your host, Jeff Sloan. Today, joining us on Inside Michigan Business, we have Ryan Calley, President and CEO of the Small Business Association of Michigan. That's SBAM, as it's known. Of course, Brian was the former Lieutenant Governor of the state of Michigan, and now he's turned his focus specifically on the small business sector here. He's joining us today to talk about the just-released highlights from a survey that SBAM does now once a quarter, focused on the sentiments of small business owners here in Michigan. Brian Calley, thanks for joining us. Your survey really paints the picture of how small business owners and operators view the status quo, but in addition, it provides a really important trend line of their sentiments as well.
That's right. Once a quarter, we'll go out and we'll engage with hundreds of small businesses and just get a sense for how it's going. And then we can kind of compare it quarter by quarter to see how things are moving, what the challenges are. I don't think the survey had any real big surprises. I mean, the challenges are the things that you would probably guess are the challenges for small businesses. There was one part that really that we can get into, but that is the point that I was most concerned about. It's the confidence moving forward. You know, the thing is, when small business owners are very optimistic people.
Yes,
they have
indeed
to be.
We are.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, you have. I mean, in order to even try something, the audacity to, you know, start a business and to build something from scratch, you have to be an optimistic
person.
You
got to believe.
Yes,
you got to believe.
You have to believe.
Glass is half full, if not more.
Yeah, and this survey actually showed some erosion in that. So, you know, overall, I wouldn't say, you know, a major drop, but some erosion in confidence. And I think that's one of the things we can talk about, the, you know, the big items of supply chain and rising costs, energy costs and inflation and workforce shortages and, you know, all of those things that you would guess. But the erosion in confidence, I think, is probably the biggest warning sign to me.
I know during the pandemic, you know, there was a torrid pace of small businesses being started at the end of 2020 into 2021. I think the greatest period of time for businesses being started in the U.S. ever in its history. Some of that driven by need, some of that driven by, you know, I'm not working right now anyway, or I'm not going to keep my job anyway. This is a good time for me to make a transition. We're making other transitions in life. This is just a good time to take a step back, take a look, and recalibrate and maybe do something new. And a lot of people did just that by starting a new business. So a lot of that was going on, but I think it's a bit of a wake-up call now. Now we've got lots of new businesses started, lots of existing businesses, and really what one could argue is one of the toughest periods in the last few decades for making that business work.
Yeah, and there's always a lack of real-time information. So we know that there's a lot of new businesses that have started up. Now, what's the nature? What is really driving that? There's a lot of theories behind it, but it's really going to take a look-back period to really gather statistical information about these new business starts. The reason that we know they started is because you have to get a tax ID number from the IRS when you start a new business. And so based on those tax ID number requests, we can see how many new businesses there are. And then you also check a box when you get that that says whether or not you plan on having employees. So are you going to be a sole proprietor? Or sometimes it might be like a property holding company that doesn't really have employees. So you start up a business, and then are you going to have employees? We know that much. That's where this data, when you see all these new business starts, is coming from. And so one of the things I think professional services, I think, is going to be an important part of the story, where you have somebody that does a job for a company and realize that, hey, you know, they could do that same work for four or five or six companies and take the lid off their income potential and do it as a contractor, as a 1099 contractor.
That's really interesting. I mean, let's look at some examples here. For example, maybe accounting services. If you're a CFO for one company,
exactly,
maybe you could do that for four or five and make three, four, or five, 10 times the income.
Right. I think there's a lot of financial services possibilities, everything from bookkeeping all the way through to chief financial officer type, you know, strategy services. It could be in the information technology area. It could be in the marketing and communications area. So now when you think about, you know, every market has buyers and sellers. So on the one side, you've got a huge demand for people and not enough supply.
Right.
And so if I'm somebody who can provide some of those services, mm-hmm. that not only is there an opportunity to go out there and do something new, but you can do it at a time and you know that there's huge demand and more companies than ever that are maybe before they used to in-house this work, but they can't find people. And so they're willing to consider a contractual relationship with a contractor to do some of it. So it's anecdotal. That my knowledge on this area right now is admittedly anecdotal. It'll take a look back in a period of time to know for sure. But at SBAM, we have, 30,000 members. Like, there's a lot of anecdotes. Our anecdotes end up turning into statistics. So for us, we really do look at this as a real possibility that this professional services part of it will end up being a big, big part of the story.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Okay, so now we know that a lot of businesses have been started. We know that now we've come into this period of time when for those new businesses, but also those that were existing prior to the pandemic, we've entered a period of time that's very, very challenging and sentiment is down. Confidence is down. That's a huge point you're making. It kind of permeates everything, right? Especially for businesses where it is a sole proprietorship, where you are everything to the business. It's part and parcel. You're the business is you. So this is indeed a major factor. Let's talk about some of the results, if we can, from the survey itself. As expected, as you mentioned, inflation and supply chain issues, the cost of doing business in both of those contexts is really a major factor in decaying that confidence and decaying just the overall positive nature of small business owners today, right?
Yeah, the expectation of what's going to happen in the future, it makes a big difference in how aggressive, when is the right time to take that next step? So, for a business owner that has, say, 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 employees, like adding one more employee is a major, major, major decision.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so the idea of when's the right time to do that, it has a lot to do with that confidence level. And that's why I think when you have erosion of confidence and kind of an expectation that times are going to be tough or tougher for the next period of time, 6 months or a year or 2 years, this notion of wanting to, just pull back, and see mm-hmm. how it's going to turn out. I think that that's going to be part of the story of the next couple of months where we see business owners that are going to take more of a wait and see approach.
Yeah. And so, as you said, that's going to actually further fuel and exacerbate the problem because now, there's hiring pullbacks, which again affects the broader economy ultimately, and it affects direct spending. And there's this kind of wait and see thing right now. I think the other thing is that's also further fueling this kind of wait and see attitude is that we're not really encountering the kinds of challenges in total that we can really get our arms around. It's a little more enigmatic this time. It's not quite textbook. So what's really happening? What am I really going to face? How long is this going to last?
Yeah, in this case, it's hard to know what's going to happen, but it's also, there are so many factors that are outside of the control of the business owner themselves. So you might look at it and say, hey, look, our business, I'm confident, there's a market for this. We can go out there and take advantage and make things happen. But inflation, when you're a small business, you don't have pricing power as a buyer or a seller.
Right. You have no ability to impact that. It is what it is.
Yeah, you just get squeezed.
Right.
You're squeezed when you're trying to drive your revenues. You're squeezed when you're trying to control your costs. So, this is a factor that not only is it there's an uncertain future, totally outside of your control. I think that's where you really get to this point where people say, all right, I'm just going to have to wait and see for a while. And even like inventory management, you might say, look, we've had supply chain shortages in the past. So that would be on the side of, maybe I want to build up my inventory so I don't have that. But what's the future of the demand going to be?
Right. You don't want to hold that inventory. That'll kill you on the other side of it.
Exactly.
Right?
So these sorts of problems and challenges, I think, are the things that are most troubling and are going to result in a wait and see. I don't think that that's going to be a fatal type of a scenario, but I do think it's going to delay what the type of economic comeback that we could have had the Federal Reserve acted sooner, and had them easing up interest rates 6 months or 9 months earlier than they did, so they didn't have to do it so fast and so much. And then also the in terms of the overall government policies on employment and work labor force participation, even as most of those have mostly returned to normal, there's a long tail in the impact of
that. Yes.
And we're still very much feeling it today. So all of these things together, I think, just create dynamics where there are just more factors than usual outside of the control of the person who's making the investment decisions.
Yeah. And so one number that jumps out at me, I'm curious how this number tracks relative to past performance in the survey. 28% of small businesses surveyed are pessimistic about the business outlook in the next 6 months, while 18% are pessimistic about whether or not they're even going to be able to survive.
Yeah, and this is, of all the things, this was kind of the flashing light to me,
because yes.
In previous surveys, we started these during the pandemic. So starting out back in 2020, I think second quarter 2020 was our first one, and we've done them quarterly since then. The thing that has always been really, really neat about these is that the long-term confidence has always been higher than the short-term confidence. So no matter how big the attitude seems to be, no matter how big the challenge is, somehow I'm going to figure this out and make it.
That's that glasses half full thing driving that one, right?
Exactly, okay. Exactly. So the long-term is usually better than the short-term. Hmm. And that holds true here, but both are less confident than before. We saw before 10 to 14% generally in that kind of pessimistic category. And so now as we see in the shorter term, the next 6 months, that somewhat are very pessimistic about the business at being 28%, that's a lot higher. That's twice as high as what we've seen in the past. So while the majority of businesses still are either feeling okay or confident about their business, the number that aren't confident has really jumped. And there could be a lot of reasons for that. I mean, the stuff that we've already been talking about is part of it, but also, you know, the world has changed, and the acceleration of change has made business models, it's just flipped them on their head. I mean, in some cases, just the way that you did things before and the way the world worked before, it just changed so much that everything about the business has to change. When you go through that type of a transition, I know of many, many businesses that tell me, I've been in business for 20 years and I feel like I'm back in startup mode right now. That's how different the marketplace is for what I'm doing.
Yeah. And so what you do in good times when the marketplace is going through dramatic change like that is you reinvest in your business and you make a quick transition to being able to meet the new demands, whatever they may be, as a result of the changes and the dynamics at play. But here you have that pullback on the one hand of spending, concern about spending. Am I even going to be here? 18% of them saying, am I going to be here a year from now? So you have this conundrum now. You know, on the one hand, change is happening. You've got to keep pace in order to be able to survive. On the other hand, I either don't have the cash or I'm too scared to spend it right now to invest in my business to stay up at the time. So these are the kinds of decisions. And these are not people with big boards, you know, that bring lots of diverse capability and contacts and experience and knowledge bases to bear. These are entrepreneurs. We're flying by the seat of our pants every day, you know, literally. You know, some of us more skilled and qualified and experienced than others. But nevertheless, you know, there's a lot of pioneering going on here.
There is. And out of that, there's still opportunity. And that's why the startup activity, the new business forms that are happening, that gives me confidence that even though there's no question, like there's big change, and in that change, there's going to be winners and losers. That's not different than what it was in the past. It's just there's more of it.
It's today. More extreme.
It's more extreme
it's more acute,
than it was before.
More immediate.
But the role that entrepreneurs will play in our economy moving forward, I think there's a good chance it will be even bigger than it has been in the past.
I totally agree with you. I think actually I see a wave of interest in entrepreneurship from young to old, even more seniors now starting businesses. Certainly Gen Z really interested in business and entrepreneurship.
And it's a different business model too. I mean, we're an association that, you know, statewide association and kind of set up around the traditional model of business where you have your line of business and this is, you know, the area where you work. There's a lot of new, small, nimble companies where you have the person at the center of the company has a diverse set of capabilities, and they do a bunch of different things, and it doesn't fit into like an industry box. And that's really been cool to see develop, and where it goes, who knows? But it's exciting to see so many new people look at it and say, you know what? I don't want to stay in a lane. I'm interested in a bunch of things, and so we're going to go out and build it. It is a very different way. You know, in the past, it wasn't that long ago, and it was like, hey, you know, what are your core competencies? And make sure you stick real close to those.
Right, focus,
and there's
focus.
There's a new group of entrepreneurs that are really kind of looking at just, you know, and the neat thing is not afraid of failure. you know, to really try new things, different things, kick the tires.
Take risks.
Take risks.
Absolutely. You know, we mentioned how fast change is happening in the world of entrepreneurship, many of it forced upon us, many because of the changing dynamics out there. You know, one thing I think we can say about this period of time, it's part of the reason you and I both agree that entrepreneurship will be even more in vogue in the future, is that in times like this, these times actually, when you look back at them, these are the times that spawn some of the biggest, most successful, most disruptive and game-changing companies ever that still impact our daily lives. So, you know, I think this is also a very dynamic and interesting and exciting time. You know, one hates to use those terms in the context of survey results like this when many are feeling pain. But it's important to know that if you can get resourceful, if you can get creative, you know, if you can get outside your lane, think outside your lane, be open to alternatives. And I think, too, this is a time when you need to really listen to the guidance out there, the signals out there that may send you in a new direction, a different direction. You've got to stay in tune today, because if you're not, same old is just not going to cut it.
It's not going to cut it. And I think that having the confidence and the ear to the ground of what is changing in your area and where things are going, and also different ways of doing the same service. Another thing that I've noticed that is kind of ramping up is this acceptance or this move toward more AI and automation, even among smaller companies. So in the past, we thought of these things as being like big, giant companies use AI and artificial intelligence and automation to try and accomplish things. But smaller and smaller companies are getting into this because really you have to. When you have labor force participation rates really hanging low at around the 60% mark, there just aren't enough people. And even when you can find people, you know, are they well aligned? Do they fit the culture and the direction and the nimbleness and how hard you got to work? And so all of these things, I think, are driving more and more entrepreneurs toward exploring ways to be more efficient, to be able to grow without as much overhead. So like the tech aspect of small business, you know, it's always been there, but I mean, I think it's really going to get into a space where it's developing on a much activities on a smaller scale than what they've been used for in the past.
Yeah, some examples of that. I think you're absolutely right. I mean, it's going to be a transformative force. I think some examples of that, for example, and feel free to jump in here, Brian, but you know, just to put it in simple terms, AI can be used to better understand your customer, pull data out of the customer, find that key data, compile that key data, you know, even chatbots, for example, on a website, as simple as that may be. And that's not costly technology. This is within the reach of small businesses. And you're absolutely right. You put that technology into a small business that's competing in a market locally, regionally, maybe against a smaller pool of competitors in a given region. And all of a sudden, it can be a difference maker. It can be the kind of thing that makes you stand out from the crowd if used properly and effectively.
Back in 2018, it was the first time I went to a restaurant and they had the tablet. Looked like an iPad. It wasn't an iPad, but and it had the menu and you would order.
Sure.
And then somebody would bring your food, but you still just ordered yourself on the table. Like before 2018, I'd never seen that. And really, frankly, I didn't see much of that for the next few years. But it's actually not that uncommon at all today to see these scenarios where even, you know, you think about like a restaurant, one of the oldest forms of business that you'll find anywhere. And yet, because of the workforce shortages, investing in technology to have kind of a person at the table can handle their own order. And then, you know, you're taking manpower hours out of the equation so that a business can continue to operate when the constraints, the human resource constraints are that much lower. And then you put all the government stuff, paid sick leave requirements and minimum wage, you know, being the political football that it is. And all of a sudden, a small business owner is looking at like, well, do I want to invest in this technology to do this? Boy, I'm having a hard time staffing anyway. The government keeps on getting between me and my employees. It's time to move on this technology. And that'll create disruption. But I think it will create a whole nother avenue of innovation and lines of business where people are trying to figure out something that before was used, you know, kind of the original consumer do-it-yourself ATM machines at banks way back when, to being something that's just becoming so commonplace throughout a lot of different consumer type businesses.
And so here's the power of that, to make it clear, and I'm so glad you gave us that example, and I'm really glad you're underscoring and advocating for using technology as a way to fight back against the challenges we're facing. If you take that iPad in the restaurant and you have people ordering on the iPad, there's your opportunity using AI to collect data on that customer, know what they typically order, know when they come in, and be able to then service them more directly and better, and even to target them in the future with promotions of relevancy and so on. I mean, that in and of itself can be enough of a game changer. But oh, by the way, there's more. In your example, you take the person that used to before be your waiter, take the order. There had to be more personalized attention to every single customer. You needed more of those people. Now those people have become people that bring the food to the table, and you have the technology handling the ordering part of it. First of all, it's more exacting, I'm sure,
right?
Just the nature of things. So you make less mistakes, but on top of it, you can have fewer people. You talk about labor, you know, it's probably got to be the greatest cost to any small business. Probably labor and inventory and marketing. Those are the things.
It is.
So,
yes.
You know, you just helped me with my bottom line.
That's a, that's the exciting thing about it, is that it is investment, but it's also innovation. And I used to be in the banking business. And one interesting thing that that industry learned is that customer satisfaction went up the more you let people do it themselves. And it's kind of counterintuitive. You would think that people wouldn't want to do the work themselves. And it's a benefit on the business side of the relationship to have people do more of the work themselves. And yet, once people learned the technology, and there's an adoption curve for sure, that, you know, ATMs are pretty commonplace. But at the time when they were first deployed, there was a long tail on that adoption curve, that the more you let people handle and do the work of their financial services, the higher the customer service ratings go. And there's no reason to think that that's not possible in other lines of business. So you might think, oh, I don't know if I want to have people do their orders themselves because it's less customer service, but maybe people will like it better if it's kind of more under their control.
And also more to their responsibility. That, you know, I mean, if a mistake is made, you entered in no ketchup, but you still got the ketchup. Oh, but wait, I didn't do that right. You know, that's on you. And so, there's some of that going on. That's interesting. So you get the more than a double whammy. It goes beyond that. You get a higher customer satisfaction too, and all that. So you've made a strong point there. Technology can be a difference maker in the context of the equation we're dealing with today. You know, sitting where you sit as the lead at the Small Business Association of Michigan, 30,000 members, you get to see a lot of businesses, hear a lot of businesses, hear a lot of stories, positive and negative. Are you bullish?
I still am bullish. When I look at the number of new business starts, and I spend a lot of time around and with entrepreneurs, and the way that we organize and the leadership within the organization is we try to make sure that it stays very diverse. You know, different industries, different size business, different regions of the state, different, you know, genders and races of entrepreneurs, like, you know, just a lot of different diversity. And one thing that is a common thread throughout is that even if people are feeling less confident right now, there's still that spirit of entrepreneurship or the determination of making it work and finding their place. It's just ingrained. It's not going away. And so when I see thousands and thousands of new people join the ranks of entrepreneurs, it's good for society. It's good for our communities. It's a counterbalance to this. There's another story of this too. It's not in our survey, but there's a lot of retiring business owners now. And so there's transition happening in business, sometimes to a next generation, but oftentimes there's not another person. So like you've got some businesses where there's bigger companies, bigger investors that are kind of gobbling up pieces of businesses as baby boomers who have been business owners their entire lives retire and they sell the business. A lot of the times those are being sold kind of up into big businesses. And so we're losing that kind of local wealth generation and community control and community investment. It's a great thing that we're getting all this new business startup, but like we really, really need it because the balance of what our communities look like and how many entrepreneurs there are, given the fact that this transition is looking like it's kind of moving more toward, you know, mature businesses getting kind of gobbled up by bigger businesses. You know, nothing against bigger businesses, but the investment doesn't stay local as often as when there's a local entrepreneur.
That's right. I think it's civic economics. Every $100 spent locally, 68 stays in the community to beautify the community, pay for the schools and so on. Keep the dollars right there in your own community. So critical. Let me ask you about, you know, one critical component. It doesn't impact every small business that's being opened or those that want to grow or can't are in position to grow these days, but need capital to do it, whether that's starting or whether that's growing. How do you feel about the environment for businesses being able to access capital today? I don't think that's an issue that we've fully confronted yet, and I'm a little concerned about that. Angel investors, for example, those wealthy investors, and even venture capital firms, generally speaking, they've had a lot of cash sitting on the sidelines, and that's continued to be deployed during this period of time. But ultimately, those angels need to have confidence to be able to deploy capital into companies and have a willingness to do it. And the venture investors have to have the capital to deploy. Otherwise, whether or not they've got the spirit and the desire to do it, it's moot. So how do you feel about kind of where that's headed?
It's a tale of two worlds. I mean, if you are a mature company with a history of solid cash flow, you've got capital providers beating down your door. And even though, yes, it's more expensive today with the increases in the Fed rate.
Right, the cost of money.
It's going up, but it's still plentiful. If you've got a mature business, access to capital is not your biggest problem, or it's not a problem at all. Sorting through all your options is probably your biggest capital problem. But there still is a major challenge for newer businesses. And I don't know that we've ever really kind of cracked that code. You know, I don't think the traditional lending process is ever going to be at a point where, you know, they look at history. And if you don't have history yet, what do you do? And so, you know, the US SBA, they do loan guarantees, and that can help. That actually does help a lot. I mean, it gets some deals done. But for most businesses, the amount of capital that is deployed in the beginning, I mean, people might be surprised to know how many small businesses are actually started on credit cards and home equity loans.
Friends and family, et cetera.
Yeah, it's whatever capital you can scrape together to get this thing off the ground and going. But even when you get to these things like, you know, the angel investors and venture capital, I mean, yes, they do newer businesses, but they're usually looking for a certain size. And that size is not the type, you know, the stereotypical, you know, started out in my home at my kitchen table or in my garage or in my basement or whatever. That's not usually what it is. So it really does still come down to family money and what you can scrape together to get it started.
Maybe it's bootstrapping for a while. You know, we just have to think differently as entrepreneurs. We've been spoiled by the last decade.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned too, like bootstrapping. But I think another one of these factors, and again, this is me with my pile of anecdotes, not necessarily with official statistics to pass it to refer to. But I believe that this question of, do I leave my W-2 job to start a new business, which has always been the big question that, you know, entrepreneurs have struggled with if they started out in, you know, kind of corporate America, because of the flexibility in the workplace today, I think more people than ever have not had to choose between them.
That's a very interesting point.
I mean, we're seeing like people that are taking on multiple jobs. You know, I'm hearing from my businesses like, well, I've got an employee and they actually have two jobs, but they're still doing it. So I guess it's okay. But they're working remotely and it's very flexible in when they do the work. But if you take that extra time and say, okay, well, I've got numbers to hit. It used to be 40 hours a week to hit these numbers, but now you take my commute time out of it. You know, you take some of my expenses out of the mix and I've got extra capacity. I'm going to go ahead and keep my W-2 job, and I'm going to start a new business.
Really interesting. In closing, let's make sure everyone understands what SBAM does. Let's give you an opportunity to give us a little pitch here, because we want to give our small businesses in Michigan every chance for success, and you guys help them do just that.
Thanks so much. Yeah, the Small Business Association of Michigan, SBAM.org, SBAM.org is where you find us online. We're a membership organization just for small businesses, and it's everything from association discounts on insurance and things like COBRA administration and payroll and pooled employer plans, so very small companies can still offer 401ks to their employees. So on the employee benefits side, you know, a lot of great programs to pool small businesses together to make it more accessible, but it's also networking and professional development and compliance education, ongoing just information services and government relations and even elections in terms of who the pro-small business people are. All the politicians say they're pro-small business. We're the ones who decide if they actually are. So those types of services, but then energy efficiency as well. And then we just love to put small businesses together with other small businesses for peer-to-peer learning. So there's more than that, but those are some of the highlights of what SBAM does, and we love to grow the family.
SBAM.org. Brian Calley, thank you very much, President and CEO of the Small Business Association of Michigan. Thanks for enlightening us. You know, we're going to be checking with you at least every quarter now as those survey results come out to keep our finger on the pulse of how small businesses are faring here in the state. Thank you, Brian.
Look forward to it. Thanks, Jeff.
All right, that wraps up this episode of the Inside Michigan Business Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to receive programming notifications and special event announcements by going to InsideMichiganBusiness.com. Follow us on your favorite social media platform and wherever podcasts are downloaded. Thank you for listening.